Chapter 4. But the Sea. Hashirama is shaken. Toka is gone, the violent roil of her chakra long since vanished, but he still can't bring himself to move. The letter rests against his fingertips, open and spilling damning words, even though he knows his little brother meant them with only the very best of intentions. He can feel it, can sense it in every stilted phrase and awkward bit of phrasing. The excess length, when he knows Tobirama would rather write a single word where someone else would leave a paragraph. But even the kindest words can accuse, and these do. Oh, these do. Hashirama sets the letter on his lap, unable to look at it. He lifts a hand and lets it hang for a moment, uncertain, before raking it through his hair. Of their own volition, his fingers clench, but the ache in his scalp doesn't alleviate the one building in his chest, gathering in his throat. My only regret is that I will not live to see your dream come to be. Already Hashirama knows that he is a man who sees too little. His focus is narrow, no matter how far ahead it stretches. But never before has he realized it as he does now. For so long, his dream has been everything, a siren song to consume every waking hour and every last bit of his drive. And he'd thought it fine, acceptable. After all, he works for the good of his clan, and with the good of every other clan close second. He leads the Senju towards peace, and even if he wishes their greatest foes to walk that path beside them, surely it's the goal that matters in the end. The war has gone on for too many years. They fight without reason now, and Hashirama wants nothing more than to end that. But when was the last time he spoke to Tobirama, truly? What does he know of his little brother's own dreams, his hopes, his fears? What does Tobirama love, besides his foolish older brother who can never do anything right? Tobirama's love is clear. So obvious, so sure, even though Hashirama has never taken the time to notice. He knew, of course, that Tobirama cared for him. They're brothers, after all, blood and kin and the last of their immediate family. And for years they've relied on each other for practically everything. But his notice was a distracted thing, a passing thought given and... Always, Tobirama has been his right hand, his logic, the cool head to draw him back when his emotion can't be trusted. And perhaps Hashirama has forgotten, over time, that there is more to his brother than a cold expression, a sword that strikes too quickly. Has he ever asked, really, what Tobirama wishes for the future? Does he know what his brother dreams of or desires? Why is it that only now Hashirama remembers a small, skinny boy calling every adult they knew an idiot for not being able to make and follow a treaty? When was the last time he took an hour and sought Tobirama out, rather than waiting for Tobirama to find him? When was the last time he listened, no matter how it bored him, when Tobirama explained a brilliant new jutsu of his own creation? And what if, he thinks, with a little shiver of horror he can't quite fight back. What if Toka's fears are true, and he can never have that chance again? But they can't be. There's no chance, because Hashirama knows Madara, and the Uchiha wants peace as much as he does. But what if he's wrong? What if... He presses a splayed hand across his face, and his breath shudders out of him, inches away from a true sob. I didn't mean it, he whispers, even though the man those words are meant for is miles distant. Miles distant and... But no, he can't be. He's not. Madara wouldn't do such a thing. They're friends. Even if Izuna is dead, surely... Hashirama curls in on himself, trying not to shake. Surely... He thinks, giddy with hysteria and fear. I didn't, he tells Tobirama, days too late. I didn't mean you. I didn't mean it like that. Please, I was just... Angry, directionless, desperate, watching the ruins of that final bit of childhood wonder crumble around him, and it all boiled out like bile. Tobirama was convenient, because he was there, because it was his blow that left Izuna mortally wounded, because there was still, somewhere deep down inside of Hashirama, a small bit of resentment at the fact that it had been Tobirama to follow him to the river when they were children. It had been Tobirama who had led their father there, who shattered his friendship with Madara for the first time. It's a pointless sentiment. Hashirama knows it. Tobirama couldn't have disobeyed their father when he gave the order, so he hardly had a choice. And if Tobirama hadn't, it's possible that Tajima Uchiha would have killed him there on the riverbank, alone and outmatched, because Izuna did the same as Tobirama. But such things linger, far past when they should, and Hashirama knows that this is the same. He's never put quite as much faith in his little brother since. His trust, certainly, but always he's treated Tobirama with an edge of exasperation, never expecting certain things from him. Things like mercy, or a desire for peace, or anything except their father's cool superiority. And maybe Tobirama has never proved those expectations wrong, but did Hashirama ever give him the chance to? A hand on his shoulder, gentle and warm, and Hashirama slowly raises his head. Mito is kneeling at his side, pale blue robes pooling like water around her, and her expression is soft. She doesn't try to assuage his guilt, doesn't say it's not his fault, says nothing, in fact. Instead, she leans forward to kiss his brow, then cups a hand around the back of his head and guides his head down to her shoulder. With a muffled sound of anguish, Hashirama leans into her thin form, wrapping his arms around her torso and burying his face in smooth silk. With a quiet murmur, more meaningless noise than words, Mito strokes his hair, letting him lean on her. What do I do? He whispers at length, lost and adrift. What do I do? Mito takes a breath, slow and calm, and then repeats it. Again and again until Hashirama is breathing with her unconsciously, dropping back from the edges of panic to more even ground. She pats his back briskly and says, in a no-nonsense voice, Do? Hashirama, now you make it right. Had he the breath to laugh, he would. His beautiful, practical wife, so blunt that she keeps herself from speaking in public more often than not, and gives most the impression that she is shy and docile, when nothing could be further from the truth. He would be lost without her, he thinks, and squeezes her gently to show his gratitude. She pats his head like he's a child, then leans back, and Hashirama lets her go. Mito smiles at him, just briefly, and then says, I'll see to your work. Focus on this. Hashirama watches as she rises, elegant and graceful, and sweeps back towards the house with perfect poise, not deigning to notice the shattered remnants of their lunch as she steps daintily over them. Then he's alone with his thoughts again, and it is an unhappy state to find himself in. Restless, he reaches for the letter again, his eyes skimming the neat brush strokes, but hardly registering the words. They're already burned into his memory regardless, as impossible to forget as the guilt that tears at his stomach with razor-edged claws. My fault, he thinks. And it's so easy now to think back to Tobirama's face, that evening in his office. So easy to remember bitter words, exaggerated accusations, flung against his little brother so readily. Tobirama had just taken it, accepted it, as though he hadn't expected differently. And Hashirama curses softly, rubbing at his brow. His little brother walked to his death thinking Hashirama didn't care for him. He went to die thinking that Hashirama valued peace over his life. But the thought is like lead in his gut, sinking and heavy, and Hashirama swallows, feeling sick. But was he wrong? Hashirama can't lead his clan into war against the Uchiha, not any more than he already does. These skirmishes that wound both sides and push at their borders and accomplish little else. But Tobirama's death will require true war, the kind their fathers waged. It will necessitate killing the Uchiha indiscriminately, taking revenge for the clan head's brother, sacrificing Senju for something that can never be undone. There's no way Hashirama could ever bring himself to order such a thing. Even for Tobirama's life, even to kill his murderer, Hashirama won't become the kind of man who would start a war. Does it matter that the man he would be fighting against is Madara? Hashirama wants to think it doesn't, but uncertainty is like poison in his mind. Madara is an ideal, more than anything. He's the enemy who shouldn't be an enemy at all. The enemy who was more like Hashirama than any of Hashirama's own family. He is a friend, no matter how many times they meet in battle. A kindred spirit in a bloody world. A dreamer with visions of peace to match Hashirama's own. Never, ever in Hashirama's life has he felt closer to another soul than he has to Uchiha Madara. The knowledge that Tobirama is likely gone from this world, and that his life was stolen from him by Madara's hand, sits heavy and cold in Hashirama's heart. But he already knows he won't act on it. Even if it were himself alone, and he didn't carry the fate of the Senju, Hashirama doesn't think he could ever do it. Not solely because of Madara, or Hashirama's differences from his brother, but because Hashirama is a man who values peace above all other things. More than blood, more than family, more than any one life, no matter how dear that life is to him. He fights when he must, because more will die if he doesn't. But to lead his clan into war, to kill because of one death, that's everything he's always been against. And just because it is his brother dead doesn't mean his beliefs have changed. Perhaps that makes him cruel or blind. That he is a poor brother is without doubt, unquestionable. But Hashirama can't change the very core of who he is. Not even for Tobirama. He wants to weep at the thought of Tobirama, always so cool and distant, walking a step at a time towards a dark fate. Wants to weep for the loss of those quicksilver smiles, so rarely earned but all the more precious for it. How long has it been since Tobirama gave him one? All he can recall are the ones with which Tobirama favored Toka. She's always made him smile more easily than most, because their senses of humor are alike, but sometimes Hashirama will do something or say something, and Tobirama will look at him and let his eyes crinkle, let his mouth twitch up. It's a private expression of amusement, shared in confidence, and those Hashirama has always treasured as much as the smiles. Perhaps he isn't a good brother, but that doesn't mean he loves Tobirama any less. Perhaps he hasn't paid attention where he should, but that doesn't mean he's overlooked him entirely. They're just different people. Hashirama has never asked Tobirama what his dream is. He always simply assumed that it was the same as his, that Tobirama also dreamed of a place of peace and prosperity. And maybe he does, but Hashirama never asked. It feels like a terrible, aching oversight now that he didn't. Will he ever get the chance again? He will. Hashirama has to believe that. He has to believe that even in the depths of his fury, Madara wouldn't kill Tobirama, because they're friends, because they both want peace, and this isn't the way to achieve it. Because Hashirama can't imagine, past the sick, nauseous feeling clawing up his throat, having to look at his best friend every day for the rest of his life and imagine Tobirama's blood painting his hands. "Now you make it right," Mito said, and she's correct, as she ever is. Hashirama takes a breath and pushes to his feet, smoothing his hands over the fabric of his loose pants, and then straightening firmly. One of the clan has falcon summons, often used for sending letters, and Hashirama aims his steps towards the woman's quarters, knowing she'll send a message for him without asking questions. He needs to speak to Madara. Before anything, he needs to know. He needs his brother. And if he can't have Tobirama beside him, he needs to understand why. Izuna is under the very strictest orders to take it easy and not strain himself in the slightest. Madara relented on the idea of having guards follow him around, mostly because he is well aware of what Izuna would do to him if he had continued resisting. But he hasn't yielded where his orders regarding physical exertion are concerned. As far as Izuna is concerned, Madara is a mother hen and should be cooked into soup forthwith. Ignoring the rash of worried glances he's accruing, Izuna continues his determined stride towards the guard post at the front gate, where a pair of familiar faces are stationed. He sat inside like a good boy, read his scrolls until he thought he'd go mad with them, and now he's sufficiently fed up with inaction to the point where he doesn't give a damn about his brother's opinion anymore. Besides, Madara and Izuna will both leave the rest of the clan entirely out of any arguments between them. That one incident with Kasumi getting caught in the crossfire when they were children taught them that much, and the lesson stuck. Kasumi is terrifying. If she weren't already blissfully married to a very, very lucky civilian, Izuna would have snatched her up long ago. Or, well, he'd have tried. Going by past attempts, she'd have laughed at him and then kicked him in the face. Truly a magnificent woman. And indeed, it's Kasumi at the gate, with Hayato beside her. Izuna gives the latter a cheerful smile, and the former a polite nod. "Friends!" he says cheerfully. Kasumi eyes him skeptically, clearly aware of Madara's order, but doesn't try to make him follow them. "Izuna?" she returns, even as her Sharingan eyes drift back towards the road. Such attention isn't normal, no matter how good a guard she is. Izuna frowns, hand automatically falling to his weapons pouch. "Is something wrong?" The two exchange glances for a moment, before Hayato says quietly, "Kyoshi's patrol was due back an hour ago." That's worrying. Kyoshi is one of the most experienced kunoichi. Even if she were delayed, she would have sent a messenger. Izuna thinks of the senju languishing in their cells and feels his mouth pull tight. Spinning on his heel, he glances around the courtyard for the shinobi he just passed, then calls, "Hikaku, is your squad nearby?" The man glances up, short ponytail swaying, and if he's confused by the question, he doesn't show it in the promptness of his answer as he approaches. "They'll be here any minute. We were planning to train together. Is there a mission?"
"Madara will skin him."
"That's all right, because Izuna is perfectly well, absolutely fine, and entirely capable as long as he's not facing ridiculously crafty senju with the ability to teleport." "Decided," he says. "There is now. We have a patrol to locate. Kasumi, do you know their route?" Despite his recent injury, Izuna is still the clan head's brother, and Kasumi doesn't bother arguing. "The north road, past the shrine, then looping back from the west." "Away from the senju, then. Interesting. Maybe it's just a coincidence after all." Somehow, Izuna doesn't think it is. Seeing Hikaku gathering his three squad members, Izuna takes a breath. "Let my brother know what's happening," he orders, "and double the patrols heading out. If this is an attack, I don't want us caught unawares." Kasumi doesn't say, "Your brother is going to yell at you again," but the thought is clear on her face as she nods and turns, hurrying towards the main building. Izuna doesn't pause to watch her go, but waves Hikaku and the others out. nods to Hayato, and follows them into the forest. Practiced and efficient, the squad spreads out to cover ground, Shinobi slipping soundlessly into the bushes and fading among the trees. Izuna keeps to the road, making himself a target. As one of the only Uchiha with a Mangekyo, it's his duty, whether Madara chooses to see it that way or not. He's not alone, either. Hikaku flanks him, wary eyes scanning their surroundings, as they head towards the north. It could be a trap, the younger man murmurs after they made it a good distance unhindered, too low for anyone but Izuna to hear. Izuna acknowledges this with the tip of his head. We can't afford any more losses, he returns at the same pitch. If there's a way to save them, we have to try. With a faint grimace, Hikaku concedes the point. Still, he mutters, if it's one of those crazy Inuzuka again, you get to deal with them. I'll meet you back at the compound. It takes effort not to laugh. What? Shin just wanted to be your friend. He was 3 seconds from humping my leg, Hikaku retorts. But keep snickering. Next time I run into him, I'll let him know you're interested. Some people have no sense of humor. Izuna rolls his eyes and pointedly doesn't answer, shifting his attention to the road instead. He can't see anything, and the Sharingan can't make out any hints of movement, even though this is definitely the best spot for an ambush. The trees lean close together here, and the path curves sharply away, hiding what's ahead. Carefully, he draws a kunai, readying a trickle of chakra so he can call up a katon jutsu the moment there looks to be a need. Suspicious, Hikaku murmurs, slowing his steps as they approach the bend. Izuna nods silently, then braces himself, signals Hikaku to match him, and leaps forward at a flat run. They round the curve together, anticipating practically anything, and find nothing. The road is empty, not a sign of life anywhere along it until it disappears in the distance. Disgusted, Izuna rocks back on his heels. Not even a damn bird, he mutters, though he doesn't feel quite steady enough to put his kunai away yet. Turning, he glances into the trees, looking for one of the other shinobi to ask if they've seen something. And then, from above him, someone says flatly, "Tweet." Izuna spins, half a second too slow. Even as he brings his weapon up, a naked foot comes flying at his nose. He ducks, but the move is a feint. A bare instant later, the steel-capped shaft of a polearm catches him in the gut and knocks every bit of air out of his lungs. As he wheezes, trying to get both his breath and his balance back, the attacker slides past him like a flicker of wind. He gets a blurred impression of long, dark hair before Hikaku yelps and lands hard on his back, feet knocked out from underneath him by a sweeping kick. There's a cry, a shout, and two more Uchiha lunge out of the trees, but the attacker doesn't hesitate. The heavy shaft smacks Izuna over the head just as he starts to turn, sending him reeling with stars spinning behind his eyes. And an instant later, the stranger is between the approaching pair. A foot lashes out, taking down the one on the left, and the one on the right slashes out with a tanto, but the attacker blocks it with the blade of their weapon. A snarled curse, a twist, a knife hand blow to the back of the Uchiha's neck, and the man goes down in a heap. Katon, Izuna starts, hands flickering up in automatic seals, but loses his voice to a breathless grunt as a foot slams into his stomach. He overbalances, tumbling onto his back in the dirt, and the attacker follows him down, landing right on top of him with their knees pinning his forearms and their naginata locked crosswise beneath his chin, braced to break his neck at the slightest provocation. You! The attacker snarls, and from this close, without the blur of constant movement, Izuna can finally see that it's a woman. Tall, fighting fit, with a waterfall of deep brown hair tumbling over her face and shoulders, and nearly hiding furious amber eyes. A crimson-painted mouth is twisted into a ferocious snarl, but the face Izuna can make out is angular and lovely. He stares, half-stunned, but before he can move or think, Before he can even activate his Sharingan and catch her in a genjutsu, she spits a curse and dives to the side. A kunai thuds into the earth right next to Izuna as the kunoichi rolls, comes up in a crouch, and leaps. One impressive bound carries her up into the branches above them, and an instant later she's gone without a trace. Izuna blinks blankly at the spot where she vanished for a long moment, then lets his head thump back into the dirt.
Wow,
he says dazedly. Hikaku sighs, long-suffering, as he retrieves his kunai and slips it away.
Somehow, he answers dryly, I don't think that's quite what you're supposed to say in this situation.
Did you see her?
Izuna insists, levering himself up onto his elbows. One flick of his hand encompasses their section of road, now decorated with two unconscious Uchiha, another emerging from the trees, Hikaku with the beginnings of a magnificent black eye, and Izuna himself.
Did you see that?
You mean, did I just see one kunoichi knock you on your ass and then take out an entire patrol in under 30 seconds? Because it might surprise you, but I was here for that, too.
Giving up on reasoning with such blind, apathetic, unromantic people, Izuna flops back with a dreamy sigh.
Do you think we'll see her again? He asks hopefully.
Hikaku leans over him, expression extremely unimpressed. Going by the bloodthirsty look on her face, I'm sure she'd be more than willing to kick your ass again whenever the opportunity presents itself, he says judgmentally. Okay, Izuna, fingers. How many do you see? Annoyed, Izuna bats the younger man's hand away from his face.
She's perfect, he insists.
She's the enemy.
True love acknowledges no mortal boundaries,
Izuna informs him piously. With a low groan, Hikaku slaps a hand over his eyes.
You were not listening to me.
Fantastic! Come on, lover boy. She's probably got Kyoshi and her group, too. We should go make sure they're all still breathing. Reluctantly, Izuna allows Hikaku to drag him to his feet.
Who do you think she is? He wonders.
Anara? An Inuzuka? And it's not all attraction talking. Not when she clearly is an enemy. But Hikaku is fun to get a rise out of and doesn't need to know that.
I've yet to see Anara move that fast, Hikaku says with a sigh, clearly deciding to humor him.
Izuna will forgive him, since he didn't get a glimpse of the kunoichi's pale, lovely face, or have her long, lean legs, mostly bare, given the way her already short dress was riding up, holding him down. And she didn't smell like a dog, so Inuzuka's probably out too.
There was something familiar about her, though Izuna can't quite put his finger on it.
He turns it over in his mind, along with the deadly grace of each step she took, the perfectly controlled sweep of her naginata, and the utter silence of her movements as she disappeared.
Gorgeous.
Even if it's just to get dumped in the dirt, Izuna really wants to meet her again. The intruder is stealthy, but Madara is better. He stalks her steps from practically the moment she lands in the compound, slipping over a quiet portion of the eastern wall and then fading into the evening shadows. Madara follows, minding each step, because he'd expected something like this the moment the first ambush patrol returned. Too many ambushes, with no casualties to speak of, and it had thrown the clan into a frenzy. There are 7 squads combing the forest right now, as well as Izuna and his group, and a rash of lightning-quick attacks have been aimed at the most remote. It's a good tactic for drawing the enemy out, Madara allows. Alone and moving fast, one kunoichi can cover more ground than a wary squad, and she used that to hit separate areas before looping back, leaving chaos behind her as she approached the actual objective of her mission. Were Madara in a similar position, he'd likely do the same. The fact that there have been no deaths is the only reason Madara doesn't kill her on the spot, but he's also faintly curious, highly suspicious. It's convenient timing, after all. Tobirama assured him it would be a week before Hashirama knew of his absence. And to be attacked now? Such an underhanded move hardly seems like something Hashirama would allow. But Madara has seen Tobirama fight, has seen the way he allows his enemy the illusion of victory before he comes up from below and finishes them, and it's possible. Not likely, Madara thinks, and is surprised by that. But he remembers the fear in Tobirama's eyes during their encounter, remembers the unconscious hope when he realized that Izuna was still alive. Tobirama is more assassin than actor, and Madara doubts he could fake such emotion so readily. Still, his eyes narrow when the kunoichi, who looks more like a madwoman than a trained shinobi, with her tangled hair and bare feet and ripped, mud-splattered wrap dress, whirls out of the darkness to knock out the guard in front of the prison. She catches the Uchiha as he falls, settling him carefully off to the side, and then ducks through the doorway and hurries down the corridor between the cells. Madara follows as soon as he's certain the guard is still breathing, and soundlessly tails her towards the prison's only occupant. The shadows are deep enough to hide him, so he slips forward until he has a decent view and then stops, watching closely. The woman catches sight of the Senju in the cell and abandons all stealth, crying, "Tobirama!" as she throws herself forward, desperately reaching through the bars. Tobirama jerks as if stung, leaping to his feet with an expression of unadulterated shock on his face. He freezes, red eyes going wide, and then crosses to the door in two quick strides and grabs the kunoichi's hand. "Toka," he says, and it's relief and worry all wrapped up together. "Toka, what are you doing here?" Toka. Madara knows that name, and he lifts one brow in disbelief as he connects it with the uptight, impossibly haughty kunoichi in blue-gray armor he's seen on the battlefield. The very one he used to torment Tobirama, in fact. There's little of that precisely put-together woman in this ragged kunoichi, though, despite the lovingly maintained naginata slung across her back. Apparently, Tobirama is thinking along the same lines, because his next question is, "Are you barefoot?" Toka makes a sound somewhere between a laugh and a snarl, and uses her grip on Tobirama's hand to yank him right up against the bars. "You bastard, little cousin," she rasps, twisting her arms through to hug him as best she can. Why would you do something like this?" The man goes tense in her grip and looks away, shaggy hair falling to hide his features. "You read my letter," he says, and it's an accusation all twisted up with bewilderment. By the expression on her face, Toka is quickly losing her patience. "Yes!" she cries, curling a hand around Tobirama's cheek and forcing him to face her. "I'm able to tell when someone's lying to me, Tobirama. And you were. There was no mission. Just this. And Hashirama was too busy brooding to look for you. But if you were doing something stupid, I knew I had to stop you. And you were. How could you think this is what Hashirama wanted?" Madara's breath catches in his throat, and he feels something tense and sick twist in his stomach. "What?" "It wasn't," Tobirama denies, but there's little conviction in his voice. "But he values peace, and I stole his chance at it. What else could I do?" He reaches up, curling his fingers around Toka's wrist in a grip that is clearly as much for his comfort as hers. "Toka, he lives for his dream, for the chance that Madara will walk the path to peace beside him. If I stole that, I couldn't live with myself. What kind of brother would I be?" The missing pieces are falling together, and Madara loathes the picture that they make. He and Izuna argue, frequently and heatedly, but as he told his brother earlier, they never doubt the other's love, no matter what is said. And for Tobirama to think, even for a moment, that Hashirama's dream of peace is more valuable than his own life, that a cessation of fighting would matter more to Hashirama than having his brother alive and well beside him, well, it's terribly, terribly sad, for one thing. Clearly, Toka agrees. The living kind? She hisses. But then her expression crumples, twisting into grief. She leans forward again, arms reaching, and Tobirama's eyes soften. He reaches back, embracing her as best he can, with the bars in the way, and murmurs an apology against her hair. Go, he says at length, though his eyes are sad. I'm alive, and they won't kill me. But you're in danger here. I won't have that on my head. Toka's lips twist into a sharp scowl. Not without you, she counters, acidly, ghosting a finger over the dark bruise on his cheek. Even if I have to knock you unconscious and drag you out of here, Tobirama, don't think I won't. I came here ready to carry your corpse home and leave this place in ruins. If you think I won't go through with that... Marara snorts softly, stepping forward into the light. Please don't, he says, and takes pleasure in the way both send you twitch. The tension that bleeds into Tobirama, the apprehension that twists his face. By all rights, given who and what he is, it should bring Marara joy. It doesn't, and the realization makes him sigh a little, running his eyes over the pair. I hope you know you're ruining all of my plans, he complains, crossing his arms over his chest. How his father would despair to see him now, he thinks, and feels only smug satisfaction. Toka bristles like a cat, turning to put herself between Marara and her cousin. Splendid, she retorts. And what would those plans be? Torture? Murder? Peace! Marara snaps, glaring right back at her. Your cousin handed me the greatest bargaining chip I could ever have hoped for, and I mean to make use of it. If the Uchiha believe they have leverage, they'll finally be willing to enter negotiations. I'm not about to let the opportunity go to waste. Wariness shifts to calculation on Tobirama's face as he assesses the angles. Then, slowly, he inclines his head. It will work. At least from our end, he agrees. I know little of your internal politics, but the Senju will agree. The certainty in his voice is good to hear, and Marara nods in silent thanks. He'd been aware that Hashirama would take the chance, but it's a relief to know that the rest of the Senju will as well. Unbelievable, Toka mutters, crossing her arms over her chest and glancing between the two men. Her sharp eyes narrow before she huffs and drops the posture, in favor of offering Marara her wrists with a chilly smile. Well, two hostages are better than one, right? She says, with poorly contained malice. Lock me up, Uchiha. You should be aware that I'm not letting Tobirama out of my sight ever again. Senju are genetically predisposed to melodrama, Marara thinks, rolling his eyes. He pulls a key from the chain around his neck and waves the kunoichi to the side as he unlocks Tobirama's door. You'll cooperate? He asks, meeting crimson eyes, and sees nothing but wary acceptance there as Tobirama holds his gaze. For my brother's peace, Tobirama agrees, stepping out of the cell. Everyone's peace, Marara corrects. But Tobirama just shakes his head. I have never known peace, he says flatly, so I can hardly know what to want. Until I do, it is my brother's dream, not mine. Marara thinks of the quiet resignation when Tobirama was on his knees, before his death, the paleness of his face when he practically exhausted himself healing Izuna. Someone with that strength of conviction? Perhaps your brother can convince you, he thinks. Then remembers Hashirama's part in this strange mess and grimaces. He doesn't know the exact circumstances, but regardless, he doesn't believe that this gap can be mended so easily.